Good morning, everyone. Let me also echo John in beginning by acknowledging the tragic events in Bondi over the weekend. Our thoughts and condolences go out to anyone who has been affected. I want to thank John, Andy, the team at AusPayNet for the opportunity to join you all again here today at the annual summit. This forum has been running for less than a decade, but in that time it's really emerged as a centrepiece on the calendar for industry and for regulators. And I suspect that at least part of the reason why Australia has a world-class payment system is because we have opportunities like this where we can come together and road test the big ideas for the future of the system. Long may the spirit of engagement continue. It's difficult to think of another time where developments in the payments and digital money ecosystems here in Australia or abroad were more fascinating than now. There are big structural forces reshaping our operating environment, technological change and geopolitical disruption among them. And this change is amplifying both risks and opportunities. As the Governor observed in her Bradfield oration recently, our collective challenge is to manage both in a way that improves the lives of all Australians. The key question that I will address in my remarks today is this. In a period of profound structural change, how can we build an ecosystem for payments and market infrastructure that is both highly resilient and highly innovative? One that is able not just to weather storms, but as I discussed recently, is anti-fragile in the sense that it stands to benefit from change and disruption. It's no accident that the twin themes of resilience and innovation underpin the RBA's refresh payments policy strategy out to 2027. This strategy has recently been published by the Payment System Board to assist industry in their prioritisation efforts. And conscious that industry already has plenty on its plate, the RBA's contribution to the implementation plan of the CFR Better Regulation Roadmap will also shortly be published to provide industry with additional visibility over the sequencing of our wider priority set. But the bottom line today is I am optimistic that our system is up to this twin challenge, but it will require everyone involved, industry and regulators, to prioritise somewhat differently to recent decades. So why resilience and why now? If we step back for a moment and consider the properties of resilience that could apply to any technical system, not just payments, quite a few possibilities spring to mind. Interoperability, diversity, redundancy, adaptability. Now, each of those concepts can bring pros or cons on their own, and how they interact is critical. A case in point, if diversity simply translates to duplicating systems with limited interoperability, there may be more costs than benefits to the system. But in the years ahead, I suspect concepts like these will feature more prominently in the design of our payment system and associated infrastructure. To move from the conceptual to the concrete, a safe and resilient payment system underpins economic activity in Australia. Every day, the value of payments settled at the RBA through our real-time gross settlement system is equivalent to more than 10% of Australia's annual GDP. The size and interconnectivity of our payment system means that major disruptions could have systemic consequences for financial stability, for economic activity, and in extreme cases, for social cohesion. This is a sobering reality. Three themes stand out here, all of which are structural rather than cyclical in nature. The first relates to our deteriorating strategic circumstances. As the Director General of the ONI recently reminded us, The pace and gravity of strategic change is accelerating. Our region is now the epicenter of global systemic rivalry, and our operating environment is one where coercion just below the threshold of conflict is becoming normalised. This is making for a less forgiving and less predictable world. The potential for external shocks to threaten the provision of critical financial services is rising, and the risk of coordination failure is larger for adverse geopolitical scenarios compared with more traditional financial risks. This realisation has been informing a program of work overseen by the Council of Financial Regulators for some time. The second source of structural change relates to technological transformation. Increasing digitalisation is yielding substantial efficiencies for the financial system and making new functionality possible. At the same time, it's expanding the attack surface for cyber intrusions and making the potential consequences of operational disruptions more severe. Applications of AI reflect both sides of this coin. The financial system is contending with accelerating waves of DDoS attacks, and the commercialisation of cybercrime on the dark web is becoming big business. A concentrated group of key third-party technology providers are increasingly performing critical functions, such that a major disruption in one could have ripple effects right across our system. Last year's CrowdStrike episode and the AWS outage a couple of months ago are just a couple of recent reminders. A third and related challenge is the interdependencies between the payment system and other critical national infrastructure are coming into sharper focus. It can be taken for granted that the functioning of our wider financial system and the payment system within it is dependent on the smooth functioning of the electrical grid and the telecommunications network. But these core services are increasingly experiencing their own resilience challenges, which can have downstream effects on the broader Australian economy. For a recent example, look at the April blackout of the Iberian Peninsula that affected 50 million households and saw daily economic activity and electronic retail payments in Spain decline by approximately half. And that disruption could easily have been worse had the geographical span of the outage been different and cash not been readily available as a means of payment. Now, we recognise it's not enough just to admire the problem from a distance, so let me now turn to some related priorities in the RBA's Forward Work Program. But a common theme here is the importance of payments infrastructures, investing in their governance, risk management capabilities and operational resilience to meet not just regulator expectations, but also those of the wider community. After all, that is who we serve. One element is a stepped-up focus on system-wide interdependency and concentration risk. We're conscious that individual entities may have limited visibility over the extent to which their vulnerability to third-party providers or single points of failure is mirrored elsewhere and could amplify disruptions if a large shock were to occur. As a result, the RBA has embarked on a program of analysis and outreach with industry and other arms of government. The scope of this work ranges from high-value payments through to retail point-of-sale and account-to-account transfers. We are actively engaging with the CFR agencies, with the Department of Home Affairs, with the national security agencies, overseas central banks, other non-financial regulators and industry in order to develop a more holistic system-wide mapping of vulnerabilities. Now, a notable example where our collaboration with industry is spurring both increased resilience and innovation is through the Industry Resilience Initiative. Here, the RBA and APRA are working with banks, AP Plus, and AusPayNet to enhance existing contingency capabilities so that payment services can continue to operate, even if in a reduced form, in the event of a significant shock, like a major institution going dark for some time. Another area where we see concepts of system-wide resilience and innovation coming together is in quantum computing. The brute force computing power enabled by quantum offers intriguing possibilities. It's going to unleash capabilities in the financial system that are not currently possible, especially when coupled with AI. At the same time, these advances could pose first-order security risks and so compromise the integrity of the financial system. We know that threat actors are already capturing data with the expectation of breaking encryption down the track, a strategy known as harvest now and decrypt later. As a result, the PSB strongly supports industry efforts to migrate card payments to the advanced encryption standard. AES is viewed as a quantum safe solution should advances in quantum computing undermine the secure exchange of payment details. Some European countries are already there. The PSB expects industry to progress migration with sufficient urgency to enable readiness of AES for use by 2030 and has agreed to consult around the middle of next year on using the RBA's standard setting powers under the PSRA to support the migration. Let me turn to cash distribution. This is another element of our work on payment system resilience, cash access. Not only does cash remain an essential part of the Australian payment system, but we have 1.5 million Australians are still relying on it every day to make payments. But cash also provides a backup for localised disruptions like floods and fires when digital payments are unavailable. In this sense, physical cash is an all-hazards digital hedge. Now, in discussions with my international counterparts, I am increasingly struck by how uniform the view has become about the critical contingency role that cash can play in the economy. Sweden is one prominent example where authorities are now requiring cash distribution entities to maintain a heightened level of crisis preparedness, and a public campaign has been launched to advise the community to maintain personal cash holdings in preparation for crises up to and including international conflict. Now, the RBA fully supports the government's commitment to ensuring that Australians retain adequate access to cash for as long as they wish to use it. Accordingly, the RBA, the CFR and the ACCC have consulted on regulatory arrangements for the cash distribution system that are designed to ensure the system remains on a strong footing far into the future. In seeking to promote system-wide resilience, that framework embeds crisis readiness and resolution powers as key features. Now, ensuring our payment system can withstand extreme but plausible disruptions should not mean that innovation grinds to a halt. Quite the contrary. Australia has always been up around the front of the pack regarding innovation in our payment system. In the context of our national productivity challenge, and it's important that this remains so. As I've stressed before, there are big opportunities ahead of us if we can harness innovation in ways that not only enhances efficiency, but also resilience. There need not be a trade-off. To help play our part in fostering an innovative payment system, we have several initiatives underway. One is Project Acacia, which has been the centrepiece of our Future of Money program this year. Working alongside industry, regulators, our research partners at the Digital Finance CRC, we are exploring how new forms of digital money and financial infrastructure could support the development of tokenised asset markets in Australia. This is a growing area of interest for central banks and industry globally. We've taken the step of issuing a pilot central bank digital currency onto external digital ledger platforms to better understand how new forms of money and tokenised assets could more seamlessly interact on the same ledger. This includes where trading and settlement are synchronised into a single function, which would obviate the need for clearing and the tying up of collateral for days. It's been pleasing to see Acacia draw strong interest from a wide cross-section of industry, from large banks to small fintechs to technology companies. Across more than 20 use cases, a range of real-world assets have been tokenised. Government bonds, money market securities, mining royalties, and repo agreements among them. Now, we've deliberately not been prescriptive about these use cases because we've wanted to hear from those on the front line of industry innovation where they think the biggest potential benefits could be for the Australian financial system. The experiments will be wrapping up shortly. I'll have more to say about Acacia and our related strategic priorities on the future of money at the end of March, and shortly thereafter, the Project Acacia report will be published. For now, I'd like to thank our project partners for their contribution to the project. And my sense is it's been a leading example of how the public and private sectors can collaborate on important policy issues arising from the application of frontier technologies. Let me now turn to a topic I addressed at last year's summit that also sits at the intersection of innovation and resilience, and that is the future of Australia's A2A payment system. Now, at that time, and as our risk assessment of the decommissioning of BECCS later set out in detail, the feedback we received from a range of stakeholders at that time suggested a foundational element was missing in the migration to modern payment rails, and that was a shared vision among industry on the desired features of the future system. We shared industry concerns that just loading more risk onto modern rails that had higher outage rates than the legacy bulk system was going to be problematic if contingency arrangements were not also significantly uplifted. And so to support strategic planning by industry, RBA staff published a public interest framework in July. That framework outlines technology agnostic principles that prioritise the reliability of the payment system through robust contingency arrangements alongside new functionality spurred by competition and innovation. As an example, we view interoperability, the ability for different payment systems to connect to each other, as integral to promoting resilience, competition, and efficiency. In good times, end users will have greater choice over their providers, and when systems go down, contingency options will be available. Now, fast forward to today, I'm pleased to say that industry has made important progress, including in establishing a new coordination forum and completing an end-user consultation to inform the future vision for A2A payments. At the same time, there is a big lift still ahead. Key outstanding issues include the processing of large volumes, the account reach of the MPP and contingency arrangements. But we want to thank industry for engaging in the reset over the past year. We recognise it has not been easy. As we've said all along, if it takes industry a little longer than originally envisaged to come to a shared understanding of the system's central features, then that should be time well spent. For our part, RBA staff will continue to engage with industry via the A2A roundtable, and in March next year we will publish an update on the risks associated with the migration. We're all striving here for the same objective, that Australians can benefit from the features that modern payment rails and modern payment systems such as the MPP can provide. These include 24/7 real-time payments, richer data, confirmation of payee, and real-time verification of payment. But to achieve this, we need everyone in the ecosystem continuing to engage, from PSBs to corporates and government end users. Now, ensuring Australia's financial infrastructure is fit for the future is a key focus of ours at the bank. This can be seen not only in our involvement in initiatives like Project Acacia and the modernisation of Australia's A2A system, but also in the RBA's forthcoming strategic modernisation of Australia's high-value real-time settlement system, RITS. Now, the last major innovation of RITS occurred back in 2018 with the public launch of the Fast Settlement Service. That's a system that enables real-time 24/7 settlement of MPP transactions, and today it's processing about 4 million transactions daily, mostly under a second. The RITS modernisation project will explore a range of options to ensure our critical settlement infrastructure can support the evolving needs of the financial system well into the future. Now, under cross-border payments. Under the G20 roadmap, Australia is committed to supporting international efforts to address challenges in cross-border payments. A priority for the RBA in recent years has been engaging with industry over the adoption of richer data and new capabilities in Australia's cross-border payments infrastructure. Next year, we'll be examining ways to enhance wholesale cross-border payments, including as it relates to our RITS modernisation project and ongoing research into the role of digital money. We're also collaborating with central bank partners on a second phase of the Biz Innovation Hub's Project Mandala. This is a project that is exploring protocols to automate regulatory compliance processes in cross-border payments using new technologies like digital ledgers. The aim here is to make cross-border payments more transparent, faster and safer. Now, in light of the government's efforts to modernise Australia's payments regulatory framework, the RBA also has a number of initiatives in train. First, following recent amendments to the PSRA, the RBA will publicly consult on the Payment System Board's regulatory priorities in mid-2026, taking into account these amendments and technology modernisation in the payments industry. The focus will extend to regulatory issues beyond those addressed in the current review of merchant card payment costs and surcharging. That consultation will include efficiency, competitiveness and safety issues with mobile wallets, three-party schemes, buy now, pay later providers and e-commerce platforms. We look forward to your input. Second, the RBA will be reviewing its policies for accessing exchange settlement accounts to support competition and innovation in payments. We expect to commence this review in the second half of 2026, once the first tranche of the government's payment system provider licensing reforms has passed Parliament and work on the second tranche has begun. The second phase includes the proposed common access requirements. This framework would involve APRA setting proportionate regulatory and supervisory arrangements for non-bank PSPs seeking to directly access Australian payment systems. In the meantime, we're engaging with our peer central banks to better understand how they see the competition and financial stability implications from stablecoin issuers holding funds in central bank deposits. We note the regulatory framework for the licensing and prudential supervision of issuers of Australian dollar-denominated stablecoins is an important pillar of the government's approach to developing responsible innovation in the Australian digital asset industry. And third, to further support responsible innovation in the wider financial system, the RBA will be providing input into the review of Australia's enhanced regulatory sandbox. And as a result of its learnings from Project Acacia, we're examining whether and how a dedicated digital security sandbox could further support the development of tokenised markets and complement the more general purpose enhanced regulatory sandbox. We're looking closely at the experience in places like the UK, Switzerland, and the Euro area to guide us here. Now, before I close, it'd be remiss not to provide a brief update on the current review of merchant card payment costs and surcharging, which includes a package of proposed reforms. For instance, reductions in downstream consumer payment costs via changes to the surcharging regime for FPOS, MasterCard and Visa networks, reductions in upstream payment costs incurred by Australian merchants via their service provider in the form of lower interchange rates on card transactions, and increased disclosure of fees charged by acquirers and collection and publication of wholesale fees charged by card networks to help ensure that savings from lower interchange are passed through to Australian merchants. Now, we received more than 170 submissions from a broad cross-section of stakeholders, from merchants to issuers to acquirers, PSBs and the card networks. It would be fair to say that each of these stakeholders come at the issues from a different perspective. We're carefully weighing the balance of the various arguments that have been presented as they relate to our mandate. Given the reforms will inevitably result in some redistribution of costs and benefits across the system, we recognise it won't be possible to please all stakeholders. But when the Payment System Board does publish its conclusions and an implementation timeline for any regulatory action by March next year, I can assure you that a huge volume of information, consultation meetings, requests for further information and so on will have all been channelled towards landing on a package that we believe best promotes the public interest. The PSB is also aiming to ensure that decisions on issues like the scope of surcharging and the extent of interchange cuts will not be affected by recent amendments to the PSRA. So let me conclude. We should all aspire for a payment system that is safe and resilient, one that Australians can rely on, and one that is a hotbed of innovation and competitive efficiency. I've set out today a number of the opportunities that we see here. They're reflected in our priorities that span regulatory reform, the future of money and tokenised assets, account-to-account payments, the Industry Resilience Initiative, cross-border payments, quantum-safe encryption standards, physical cash, and the modernisation of RITs. As we realise that the sequencing of priorities is always a challenge, my colleagues at the RBA and on the Payment System Board are more committed than ever to working constructively with our partners at the colleagues at the AusPayNet and with wider industry. There is a lot to celebrate in the Australian payment system, and we all want to ensure that this remains the case far into the future. With that, thank you, and I look forward to taking your questions.
Please thank Brad, and bring the questions coming through. They're coming through now. I am mindful of our time, but we're not going to let you off the hook here. I think I might start off as a few more come through. I did want to start with this one, Brad. The RBA has been reinventing itself for a little while now and under the Governor Bullock with new boards and a fresh perspective. If you had to give the bank a report card so far, how would you score the results?
Well, that's a tricky one. I'm not sure it's best practice to mark one's own homework. But look, I won't give you a number, but what I can say is that the bank is deeply committed to preserving the aspects of the Reserve Bank that have always been held in the highest regard, and at the same time exploring every opportunity to do our job more effectively. There have been, I would say, a sweeping array of changes, actually. Some are public-facing, some are more sort of internally oriented, but they have been all directed at ensuring that we can serve the Australian public more effectively, and there is the deepest levels of commitment right throughout the organisation to get that right.
Okay, great. Thanks. We'll get to a few questions here. Are we aspiring to UK, Europe, US or Singapore approach to payments of the future? And what is our Northern Star?
We're not looking to any particular country. I mean, I think we have a world-class system here. We certainly pay close attention to developments abroad, and we're always looking at opportunities to leverage learnings internationally, but no, we're not trying to emulate a particular international system here. There's many features actually of the Australian payment system that I find, speaking to my international counterparts, they want to know how we're doing a certain thing. So no, we're not trying to replicate another country. We're always open-minded about better understanding why some countries are making certain decisions, and then we'll go away and reflect on whether there's any learnings for us. But that's how I would approach it. Right? We have a distinctly, uniquely Australian payment system, and I don't think we should shy away or apologise for that. We've got plenty to be proud of.
Okay. Do you see tokenisation of equity shares being a reality in the coming years, and what impact would that actually have on share registry providers?
We have deliberately, in all of our work on tokenisation, the tokenisation of assets and the future of money, we have kept a very open mind about what the most pressing use cases could be. What we have heard back from industry, where they see the biggest opportunities, has been more in the fixed income space than in the equity space. There are some aspects to our wholesale fixed income markets that have changed very little in 25 years. And so that has been reflected in Project Acacia, where most of the tokenisation use cases have been focused on opportunities to uplift the functioning of our wholesale fixed income markets. That is not to preclude the possibility that the tokenisation of equities takes off at some point in the future. I know the NASDAQ, for instance, are closely looking at that, as are the Europeans. But from our standpoint, the inefficiencies, when we look across our capital markets, we tend to find that there's greater scope for an uplift in the efficiency, transparency and functioning of certain aspects of the wholesale fixed income markets, a bit more so than equities, but it's also for industry to to bring those use cases to us, and we would approach those ideas with a very open mind.
Okay. And in your speech, you mentioned that cash being an all hazards digital hedge. Is it not the end of cash, or is it just a life raft here? How important is cash? Are you suggesting that people actually physically have money under their bed, Brad?
No, look, that I referred to a public campaign in Scandinavia where those discussions have been commonplace actually for many years. Look, cash, we have been consistent in making the point that for as long as Australians value having cash, we will do our bit to ensure that it is readily accessible. And we have fully supported the government in its efforts to ensure that the cash distribution system stays on a strong footing, and we're leaning into that work right now. As I said, 1.5 million Australians are still using cash every day. And it does have certain properties in the digital age which allow it to perform a sort of contingency function that other payment systems would struggle by design to perform. So we don't think about, putting cash on a life raft. No, we Australians are continuing to use it, and we think it's got some important properties that means it should be one component of our broader suite of payment capabilities.
Okay. I am mindful of the time. We have so many questions. Can we do a bit of a fireside just very quickly, try and get some of these out? What is the role the RBA is playing in the G20 targets for cross-border payments?
This is a key priority, has been for the G20 for some time, and is going to be featuring very prominently also under the US presidency. So there's discussions going on right now about what precise form the bank might play. All I can say at this point is that we are deeply committed to doing what we reasonably can at the bank to ensure that cross-border payments are safer, more efficient and cheaper. I don't think anyone should accept that the average cost of a cross-border payment with Australia in one leg is 5 to 6%, and that payment takes a couple of days. That's unacceptable. We shouldn't be comfortable with that. And we think there's big opportunities to get the costs in cross-border payments down and the efficiency up in that system. So we'll be leaning in to the G20 priorities over the next year.
And does the RBA have any concerns on the impact of the proposed interchange reforms on innovation, especially from smaller new and smaller issuers?
We have given the issues around smaller issuers very careful consideration. As you know, this is a deliberation that is ongoing, but I can assure everyone that we are very attentive to the role that small issuers have in driving innovation, in particular aspects, actually, of the card market. And so that's one of the many, many factors that are going into the pot of things that we're considering when we're trying to produce a package of reforms here that we think most promotes the public interest.
Thank you. So many questions. I'm surprised there was not one monetary question here. I cannot believe that. So you got off the hook there, unless you want me to ask you one.
Please don't.
I do want to know, as the Assistant Governor of the Financial System, when you're doing your last-minute Christmas shopping online, what's your go-to payment or what's giving you anxiety?
To be honest, it's been a little bit chaotic the last few weeks, so I'm a little behind on my Christmas shopping, I must confess.
Right, well, that's an easy way out of it. So thank you. You didn't want to favour anyone.
No.
Thank you. A big round of applause, please. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Effie. Good spot.
Thanks.